You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Such a feeling's coming over me. There is one.
Dalton sets and throws. Intercepted. Picked off by Kendricks. Eric Kendricks looking for the angle. Dives to the end zone. Touchdown, Vikings. Keenan throws. End zone. It's caught by Diggs. Touchdown, Vikings.
Bengals have done nothing offensively. They've been held to 20 yards of offense. Dalton on first down. Dalton in trouble. Dalton is dumped. Dalton.
Sacked again. Andy Dalton goes down.
Top of the world looking down on creation. And the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world.
First down, he throws. Juggled and intercepted by Newman. The former Bengal comes up with the pick.
They did a little Harlem Globetrotter action.
Keenum fading, throws, touchdown! Kyle Rudolph back on the field and in the end zone.
And again, there's just nobody covering a Viking receiver. We've seen this time after time today.
There is only one wish on my mind.
Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network. Sam Ekstrom, Sage Rosenfels, your hosts. Be sure to check out on iTunes, leave a review, leave your Twitter handle, get in the running for a Pro Football Focus Edge subscription. A lot of great information there. Vikings win. It's a victory Monday. A 34-7 triumph, and I'm not sure it was even that close. You know, Sage Rosenfels, sometimes teams can be galvanized around adversity, whether it's injury, whether it's a lame duck head coach maybe that you want to play for. That did not happen yesterday for the Cincinnati Bengals, who went into that game with half their defense gone, a head coach that had rumors of leaving after the season, and they did not appear interested in competing on a football field.
Well, that's 2 weeks in a row that the Bengals have looked this way. They looked just as bad against the worst team, the Chicago Bears, the previous week, and I think the score is about the same, 33-7 or something like that. So this one was over early, over at halftime. The Vikings just dominated them, you know, really from beginning to end. And I was sort of going back to that opening drive. Case Keenum takes a really sort of strange sack on the first, really the first play of the game, I believe. And you think, all right, well, now they have second and 23 or second 20 or something, and they very easily get the first down on one of the very next plays. I believe it was a screen. Yeah. So offensively, it looked like the Vikings just took advantage of the linebackers sort of left and right on different types of plays and concepts. They took advantage of the linebackers of Cincinnati, and it was pretty easy sledding in that first half.
Yeah, Mike Zimmer confirmed as much after the game. They had so many backup linebackers, and then they lost another one of them during the game, and they were just trying to get one-on-one matchups. So Jerick McKinnon goes off for 114 receiving yards, by far a career high, the third Viking since the turn of the century to get 100 receiving yards as a running back. He had a 41-yarder. He had a 29-yarder. He had a 31-yarder. Murray had the 28-yarder that you talked about. There was so much open space. Case Keenum didn't have to do much. He just had to hit these running backs in wide open field, and they got to run for a long time. Most of those 236 yards for Keenum were yak. He had one of the highest completion percentages in Vikings team history, 20 of 23. And it was so good for the Vikings, in fact, that Teddy Bridgewater got to return to the field. You could sense it building up for a while. The crowd started softly chanting Teddy. It got louder and louder, and eventually he got to get on the field. It was so loud that he had to cover up his helmet to hear the play call. That was one of the more emotional, special, chilling moments of the season.
Yeah, that was a neat spot there at the end for Tay to get back in. And you wondered that, you know, at the halftime, it was 24-0. If it stays anywhere near that score, you know, three or four scores, if Teddy was going to get some action there at the end, and he needed some action, obviously a little rusty and through the interception, but it's good to see him back out there. And you never know, the Vikings might need him in a playoff game. You know, you just don't know what's going to happen to Keenum, which is, as we're seeing in the NFL every week, there's so many injuries. Shoot, Teddy Bridgewater could be starting the NFC Championship game. Who knows?
Yep, and Keenum yesterday was solid. Two touchdowns, no interceptions. He threw an absolute laser to Stephon Diggs, one of his better throws the past couple weeks. Had a late one-yarder to Kyle Rudolph, the Ohio native, against the team I assume he grew up watching. Just a fun game all around for the Vikings, who were really in need of a laugher, weren't they? They've been on the road in these grind-out games the last 3 weeks against really good teams. They needed a game where they could rest the starters in the fourth quarter. By the end there, the defense was totally out. They stayed healthy, defensively at least, and they got out of there with a big win. Now they go for a short week to Green Bay, which we'll get into in a second here, but let's talk about this Marvin Lewis deal, because the report comes out in the morning from Schefter, most reliable source in football, that Marvin Lewis is going to pursue other opportunities after the year. Then after the game, Marvin Lewis says, no way, that's a false report, not happening, it's just a rumor. I think there were 14 questions after the game to Lewis, 12 of them revolved around the rumors. What do you make of all that?
Well, it didn't help his team perform in any way, that's for sure. It does not help when you're out of the playoffs, you're 5-8 going into that game, and then you wake up and you hear that your head coach is, you know, probably going to be not coaching the team next year, which is not really a surprise anyway. I think that everyone sort of assumed that Marvin Lewis was either going to be fired or would resign or something at the end of the season. The 15 years he has been there as the Cincinnati Bengals head coach, the only NFL coach who's been longer is Bill Belichick. So he's had quite the run, but they've had a couple down years, and this year really probably the worst of the most recent years. So, you know, a ton of respect around the league of Marvin, and obviously Mike Zimmer and Marvin Lewis have been friends for a long time, and they worked together in Cincinnati before Mike Zimmer came to the Minnesota Vikings.
Mike Zimmer was already in an emotional mood after the game yesterday. It looked like he might have been shedding a couple happy tears after the game. I know he has family at these games, and I know he gets really emotional when important things happen. And it seemed like yesterday he was kind of an open book, and he was kind of wearing his emotions on his sleeve. And when he was asked about Lewis, he was sentimental. He said, "I really hope it's not true. He's such a good person." Now, that being said, in the Schefter report, there was a bit in the Schefter report that said Lewis might consider going to another team as an advisor or a consultant to one of his former assistants, whether that be, you know, Gruden or Schefter actually mentioned Mike Zimmer by name. Do you think that's the kind of arrangement that a head coach would want, sort of an old boss looking over their shoulder from the front office?
Well, it depends if the head coach would want that. I would think Zimmer wouldn't mind that. And this is sort of a common thing for those who don't follow NFL assistants very often. There's these consultant roles. And you see a lot of times coaches, you know, former head coaches or just coaches in general get these jobs. And a lot of times it's just so the coaches can be around, you know, these older coaches can be around the game still, but yet not have to put in the, you know, 70, you know, or 80-hour weeks and have that grind of everybody else, but yet they still have a lot of value from, you know, breaking down some film of some opposing film or just some ideas, and then just sort of being around the facility for, you know, other coaches or young players or even the head coach to bounce some ideas off of over the course of a year. It seemed like all the teams I was on, not all of them, but for the most part, there seemed to be some older, you know, coach, some longtime assistant who was 75 years old, who, you know, the head coach I was playing for had worked for at some time in their career, and now they're giving them this sort of cushy consulting job. And I think everyone always, it was always neat to have, said, like, you know, some old 75-year-old, 80-year-old former NFL coach just in the facility. You know, occasionally, you know, you're having lunch with the guy and you're hearing all these interesting stories about, you know, football in the 60s or 70s. And so that could be definitely a type of job Marvin Lewis could do, and I think Mike Zimmer would really appreciate any of his thoughts and game plan ideas and any sort of consulting ideas. I think those two are very close.
Yeah, and now that I think about it too, there's already a couple of former coaches in that building. Jerry Burns is in and out of there now and then. Bud Grant has an office at Winter Park. He's still technically a consultant. And, of course, Bill Parcells, that's Mike Zimmer's guy that he really relies upon for the little tricks of the trade. So I'm sure it would probably go over pretty well considering the relationship that they have. I know they were extremely close. Like when Mike Zimmer's wife passed away, he really leaned on Lewis pretty hard, and they've been through a lot together. So interesting dynamic there with the Bengals. You got to feel bad for them because they're clearly in tank mode. They've lost three in a row. They have the Lions and the Ravens coming up next. The Vikings get the easy win yesterday. They are 11-3. Again, it's Sam, it's Sage here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Let's look at what else happened around the NFL. And we'll have plenty more time to talk about this game tomorrow and Wednesday, and we'll kind of slow play it here as the week goes on. But the Packers and Panthers played yesterday. Aaron Rodgers returned, threw three touchdowns, also threw three interceptions. And they had a chance to tie at the end, but a fumble by Geronimo Allison ended things for Green Bay. And from what I'm reading, they are eliminated from the playoffs if Atlanta wins tonight. So if Green Bay, well, first of all, did you see any of the highlights? And second of all, if Green Bay is eliminated, what do you think that means for Saturday's game against the Vikings?
Well, you know, first things first, I saw some highlights of the game. Didn't watch the whole thing. You know, Aaron Rodgers was keeping that game close, and obviously threw a few interceptions as well in that game. But he looked just like sort of the old Aaron Rodgers, dangerous as all can be. And it was a very good football game, very well played football game on both sides. And I think I don't know about you, I picked Green Bay in this game. I really thought that they were gonna step up and get this big win, but they did not, and they're out of the playoffs basically. I mean, what I saw last night is Atlanta has to go 0-3 in the next three games, which I just don't see happening, and then two other teams had to also go 0-2. In their next two games, and obviously the Packers are going to have to win their final two games. So really, really, really small likelihood of the Packers making the playoffs. Just not going to be their year. And the Vikings this week, I don't know. I don't know what that means. I mean, I know Green Bay is not going to lay down. You know, they've got too much pride over there, whether it's with Aaron, with their head coach, just with the veterans on that football team. There's just too much pride. They're not going to do what Cincinnati did and just sort of lay down and not really show up and get blown out. I assume this would be a very good football game next week.
I would too. I think we saw that sometimes teams react differently to adversity. You know, last year when the Vikings were eliminated, they came out the next week and they blew out the Chicago Bears. Now, it was the Chicago Bears. That's a different type of team. But they at least showed some pride to end that season. The Bengals don't seem to be doing that. As far as Saturday is concerned, you know, we talked to Anthony Barr after the game, and that's the characterization of it, is Barr versus Rodgers. Rodgers, assuming he plays, which I'm sure he will, I'm sure they're not just going to put Hundley in there for the last two games. I have a feeling that this is Rodgers versus Barr. Like, in their hearts, in Rodgers' heart, he wants to stick it to the Vikings, and I'm sure the Vikings will be rushing the heck out of Rodgers. And it's in Green Bay. There's going to be a lot of emotion. Those fans are still sending Anthony Barr hate mail, and shame on them for doing that, but he's gotten some really nasty stuff because of not even an illegal hit on Aaron Rodgers. So there's a lot behind this game, and the Vikings have to be concerned about it because the Panthers win yesterday, and to be honest, the Vikings fans should have been cheering for Green Bay because now the Panthers are on their tail. If the Panthers beat the Bucs and the Vikings lose to Green Bay, then the bye week is suddenly in jeopardy. So this is an enormous game on Saturday if the Vikings want that number two seed.
Well, and also the LA Rams won yesterday. They're right there as well. So the Vikings need to, as you said with Carolina, I mean, the Vikings lost them, so they don't have the tiebreaker. So the Vikings need to go 2-0 in the last two games. If they lose one of the last two games, I don't see them getting a bye in the first round. There's just too many teams that are sitting there, you know, right on their tails one game back. And so they need to go 2-0. I think they understand they need to go 2-0. I think they understand that basically they're playing this week on the next 2 weeks to have that bye week and get, you know, some of the healthy players back. But just in general, as a player, it's a motivating factor to go, you know what, if we play really, really well, you know, these next two games, we're going to get a bye. And that's huge for players. You just don't get almost any time off during the season at all for your bye to heal, but just a little bit of a break from football in general. That's a huge sort of fish at the end of the line there. And I think the Vikings, you know, understand that. And Zimmer understands that and is going to, you know, these players will be highly motivated. And I think for this game, you know, at the end of the season, there's always these, you know, playoff teams versus teams that are out of the playoffs. You're going to see a lot of them here in the next 2 weeks. But this game, I don't think will have any less intensity than if it was two teams that were possibly in the playoffs. I think Green Bay will come ready to play, and the Vikings are going to play really good football if they want to try to pull one out in Green Bay.
For sure. Now, tell me this. In your career, when your teams won division championships, what was the level of celebration / excitement? It's not like baseball where you win a division title after 155 games played and you go in the locker room and you spray champagne and you party for the next 3 hours. I don't get the sense that there's that much weight put on it. Mike Zimmer kind of downplayed it a little bit. You know, everyone had the hats and the shirts on, but it's not quite the same as baseball. Do you feel like everyone generally keeps their eyes on the bigger prize when it comes to football division titles?
Yeah, I mean, it's the title is nice. It means you're in the playoffs officially. Just because in the NFL, I mean, you could be leading your division by, you know, two or three games and going in the last month, and basically you feel like it's going to be a no-brainer. You're going to win the division and then lose your last three games of the year, and next thing you know, you're out of the playoffs. So, you know, every game matters so much in the NFL, and I feel like it is sort of a weight off the shoulders. We all expected them to win the division. They had a couple game lead over the course of about the last month, really. But it's nothing like baseball. I mean, winning the division is nice, getting the playoffs nice, but, you know, getting to the Super Bowl is the ultimate goal. Winning the Super Bowl is the goal, and this just sort of gets you, solidifies you into the tournament. But there's, you know, much more important things that the Vikings are going to try to get done once this postseason hits.
Here's a fun tidbit for you. This was the earliest in a season the Vikings have clinched a playoff spot since week 14, 2009, when they beat the Cincinnati Bengals in a game that you were a part of.
But I was watching it. That's about it.
Yeah, fair enough. Mike Zimmer on the other side of that game, though. He was the defensive coordinator at the time with Marvin Lewis, just small world.
It's amazing. I have a small little history of Marvin Lewis. I shared it on Twitter yesterday. When I was in Washington my rookie year, I was Marty Schottenheimer, and he got fired at the end of the season. They hired Steve Spurrier, and Dan Snyder made a really good move and went out and got Marvin Lewis, who was this, you know, top tier defensive coordinator, you know, coming from the Baltimore Ravens. And so we hired them as our defensive. As him as a defensive coordinator, and I know one day Spurrier was talking to Marvin, and I was actually around for some reason, like there was in the hallway or something, and Spurrier was talking about, because there's at Redskin Park there's about four practice fields, and Spurrier was talking about, you know, the defense is going to be on sort of field A over here, and the offense will practice on field B over here, we'll do special teams on field C over here, and Marvin Lewis said, you know, coach, we this is not college, you don't have 120 players. We only have, you know, 60 on a roster, whatever, once the season starts. We practice together. I don't think Spurrier really understood, like, your backups, your second string, in your third string. But that is the scout team for the other side of the football. You don't have, you know, all these walk-ons and you know, 85 scholarships and all these players to basically have a defensive practice on one side and offensive practice on the other. The NFL is very, very different. You have to be much more efficient than in college football.
So there's plenty more that we'll get to as the week goes on with that and the Lewis saga and obviously Vikings-Packers. We conclude with another kerfuffle. The catch rule plot thickens with one of the most remarkable football games of the season. It was billed as the best game of the year, and it turned out to be even better than advertised. Patriots down by 5 late. They drive the field with a series of passes to Gronkowski. They score the go-ahead touchdown on the Pittsburgh Steelers. They go up by 3. This game basically for home field advantage in the AFC playoffs. Patriots up 3. Steelers, with less than a minute to go, get a 70-yard pass to Juju Smith-Schuster, get down to the 10-yard line. Next play, Jesse James, tight end for Pittsburgh, makes the catch at the 1, lunges for the end zone, reaches across, bobbles the ball as he reaches. It grazes the ground, ruled touchdown on the field, overturned, and Pittsburgh has to go back out there and try to score again. And what do you know? Ben Roethlisberger, with 5 seconds left, throws an interception. Patriots win, and the controversy swirls. And we talked about it with the Adam Thielen play a couple weeks ago, and that was, you know, the second quarter of a game. It didn't decide the outcome. This decided the outcome. Again, we've talked about how the rule's pretty cut and dried. I think it's a little vaguer in this case, because is reaching across the goal line, say, Drosenfels, is that a football move? Should he become a runner at that point?
Well, I think football move isn't really a part of the equation anymore. I think that football move is part of the equation when they're talking about fumbles. I'm trying to think of what game it was yesterday. If it was the Packers game, maybe, you know, so I think it was a number 81 for the Packers caught a slant and it took about two or three steps and had sort of headed upfield and then he fumbled. You could tell he had made a football move, so that made catch and then fumble. In this situation, when it's catch and no one's really tackling you, and you're just trying to sort of finish the play, at this point, I believe that this is the right call, and it's because you pretty much just have to get up with the ball and have no sort of fumble within the catch. The ball can't be loosened by the ground anyway, which is what happened on this play. To me, the way the rule is, I don't mind it because it sort of makes things black and white. You can say all you want, and he had a couple steps, this, that, and the other, and reached across the goal line, this, that, and the other. But at this point, I sort of feel like you basically have to get up and give the ball to the official before they rule it a catch, and that did not happen in this game.
Yep, all the Patriots do is get critical interceptions at the goal line when the situation is most dire, don't they? It was Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl, and then I don't know who made the interception yesterday, the safety. Patriots win the game. They're 11-3, matching the Steelers at 11-3 with two games to go, and the path might go now through New England in the AFC playoffs. That was an amazing football game, though. You don't want to see Antonio Brown get hurt. That was unfortunate, but the drama between two titans of the AFC, as good as it gets. You love when a matchup plays out that way, don't you?
Yeah, and you know, I was thinking about this game yesterday, and if, let's just say, the Steelers do win this football game, and Antonio Brown, I assume, is out for the season. It looks like he's got some sort of torn muscle in his calf, which does not look good. So let's just assume that he's done for the year. Even if the Steelers win this football game, it's sort of like last week. It almost feels like they may have lost, in a sense, because Antonio Brown's their best player. He's an MVP candidate, and now I assume he's out for the rest of the season. So sort of a double whammy there at the end of obviously losing the game, which, you know, the Roethlisberger, the play made no sense to me of why he did that. And you have multiple different types of sort of spike plays at the end there, and you know, obviously you have your just regular clock play and you spike it down, but usually the other one's not a slant. Usually the other one's some sort of fade route, and you're inside the 10-yard line, and you know, it only takes an extra 2 or 3 seconds to throw a fade rather than clocking the ball. You might as well, if you have the play, you might as well use it. You never know, you might actually get a fade for a touchdown. But on this play, once that initial sort of throw wasn't there for Roethlisberger, he needed just to, you know, throw the ball out of the back of the end zone and kick the field goal on fourth down to put this thing in overtime. But he became too aggressive and tried to make too much of a play, and obviously came back to haunt him and the Steelers.
Yep, extremely controversial. That would have been fun to see go to overtime, but the Patriots hang on with that late pick. Moving forward this week, we'll have Locked On Packers host Peter Bukowski. We'll talk plenty about Vikings Packers. We'll put a bow on Vikings Bengals and have all the reports out of Winter Park. Jarius Wright had an injury yesterday. We'll see what his status is. Maybe we get a report on that today when we go here from Mike Zimmer pretty shortly. Sage Rosenfels and Sam Ekstrom on Locked On Vikings. Sage, we'll talk to you Wednesday.
Yep, sounds great. 11-3 Vikings, 11-win season, pretty dang good.
Absolutely. A victory Monday on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Such a feeling's coming over me.